Hello, this is the Winchester Talking Newspaper for the week ending the 17th of May, 2019. The extracts from the Hampshire Chronicle this week have been edited by Angela Ling, Carol Fraser, Jane Thomas and Sue Gannaway. And your readers today are Frieda Bates.
Hello.
John Regan.
Hello there.
And Daphne Poupart.
Hello.
And I'm your presenter, Vara Williams. The main headlines this week are expanded and upgraded A&E at City Hospital Winchester, Cathedral launches new exhibition, and controversial waste plant could run 24/7. So please could we have the story behind the first headline, Frieda?
Yes. Expanded and upgraded A&E at City Hospital. Hospital staff have celebrated the launch of new facilities after work to expand the A&E in Winchester was completed. As part of the improvements across Hampshire Hospitals, NHS Foundation Trust, building work has been taking place over the past 5 months to extend the emergency department at the Royal Hampshire County Hospital. One of the improvements was an emergency department paediatric unit, a specialist unit for children. Three rapid assessment and treatment bays have also been created, allowing patients who arrive by ambulance to be assessed quickly. A new reception and waiting area has also been created. During a special ceremony which saw Winchester MP Steve Brine officially open the new facilities, non-clinical members of the team were celebrated and got the chance to see firsthand the positive difference their hard work has made. Mr. Brine said, "The Trust received a difficult CQC report last year, which required improvements to be made, especially to the way our emergency department handles children. This report was worrying, but it didn't come as a huge surprise because of the pressure our emergency department has been under and the ageing building it inhabits. Major work was carried out over the past few months, and the result is a fantastic new emergency department, which is now fully operational. I saw for myself the fantastic impact on staff morale, and it has really energised them." And there's a picture of Mr. Brine surrounded by people all looking very attentive, and he's looking very jolly and keen and pleased with the whole show.
Cathedral launches new exhibition. A project that's been almost 10 years in the making and has seen close to £18 million spent on it will finally see priceless Winchester artefacts open to the public next week. On Tuesday, Winchester Cathedral will launch its Kings and Scribes, The Birth of a Nation exhibition, unlocking the treasures and stories of the cathedral's past and its role in shaping early English history. The project, which has been in development for 8 years after more than a year of planning, has been made possible thanks to an £11.2 million National Lottery Heritage Fund grant, as well as donations. Annabel Boys, Receiver General and Canon Treasurer at the Cathedral, says, "This exhibition will play a vital role in building a more sustainable future for the Cathedral." Thanking those who've helped fund the project, she added that visitor numbers are expected to grow from £300,000 a year to £500,000, thanks to the exhibition. The Dean of Winchester, the Very Reverend Catherine Ogle, said, "We're really proud of how we've done this. It's been thrilling." Among the artefacts from the 1,000 years in the exhibition will be the Winchester Bible, which a cathedral spokesman says is the largest and finest of all surviving 12th century English Bibles, renowned for its sheer size, rarity, and astonishing artistry. A major addition will be the secret gleaned from research into the cathedral's unique mortuary chests, thought to contain the remains of pre-conquest kings and bishops.
Controversial waste plant could run 24/7. Barton Stacey villagers fighting plans for an incinerator have been horrified to discover that vehicles, mostly heavy lorries, could arrive at or leave the site on average every 4 minutes, 24 hours a day. US company Wheeler Brater's plan to build a waste-to-energy facility next to the A303 could mean potentially over 400 vehicle movements a day, the firm has said. Previously, at a public exhibition, it told residents to expect about 140 lorries daily, so 280 vehicle movements in and out of the site, earmarked for Raymond Brown's Enviro Park. But in response to written questions, the company has now admitted the number will be much larger. Wheeler Brater's figures now detail that there could be around 280 movements of heavy diesel lorries bringing waste and another 10 movements taking fly ash, removed from the filters, away to landfill. 10 more lorry movements will involve consumables, and other vehicles will carry staff coming and going. Wheeler Brater says that while it is usually normal to operate 12 hours a day, it will be applying for 24-hour deliveries, quotes, to ensure an optimised delivery profile, adding, "This may alleviate pressure on the roads during the daytime. We welcome feedback on this," close quotes. Members of the Keep Test Valley Beautiful, No Monstrous Incinerator group, set up to fight the proposals, say they have now added concerns over noise and light emanating from the site. Spokesperson Andy Jolliffe said, "This response demonstrates Wheeler Brater clearly believe the road system is already under considerable pressure, plus the extra traffic from this incinerator will only make things much worse. And their attempt to mitigate this by requesting a 24-hour operation is totally inappropriate. Just think of the additional nighttime noise and light pollution."
Here are the death notices. The following deaths have been announced: Davis, Annette Elizabeth Davis, at Countess of Brecknock Hospital, aged 71. Drower, Lalage Drower, aged 95. Furneaux, Joyce Hilda Furneaux, at Northcote House, Gosport, aged 93. James, William Arthur James, at Flowerdown Nursing Home, aged 83. Mayors, Lieutenant Commander Walter Joseph Mayors, MBE, RN, retired, aged 92. New, Betty New, at St Catherine's View Care Home, aged 82. Polkinghorn, Anthony Polkinghorn. Smithies, Jack Smithies, aged 85. Walford, Peter Walford, at St Cross Grange, aged 92. And finally, Walker, Charles Walker, at Berwick Court Care Home, aged 70, after a long illness. And now, please, can we have the Christian comment? Sorry.
Christian comment, and this week it comes from Liz Tatum. "The royal baby wasn't the only family news last week. In my family, we had a birth and an unexpected death of someone who wasn't really old enough to die. She had only recently retired from teaching. All this news, both domestic and national, was received rapidly by social media, so we knew early in the morning about our new baby, born 2 hours before Archie, before he hit the news headlines. Of my now late cousin in Canada, we also heard very soon after the sad event. So different from the 75 years ago when her mother went to Canada as a 16-year-old war bride and had to be found by the Salvation Army a few years later. My grandfather had not heard from her in a long time and asked for help from the Salvation Army. She was found with three small children working a field that they had been promised as their own if they worked it for so many years. How times have changed. She had a total of 9 children and died only a few years ago. How we all rejoice at good news in our families. How we all grieve at loss, too. The joy in the faces of the royals, the Queen reaching out to her new great-grandchild, can be seen reflected in all families at the arrival of a baby. In contrast, grief, I heard someone say today, is a visitor after death, and for the nearest and dearest the visitor stays a long time, whilst for others it stays a while. All of this, of course, is about love. It can't be seen or proved, but we all have it and know it and feel it. In our families, whatever they are, it goes deep. So deep it is sometimes hard to fathom. Someone pointed out to us at Easter that Jesus went and visited his family before he began his last journey, passion and death. He too knew that depth of love and attachment, and his own mother didn't leave him at the cross. She stayed until the end, as mothers tend to do. The depth of love my grandfather had for his 7 children drove him to send others to find his one lost sheep far away in Canada. Of course, sometimes it doesn't work out like that. People are incapable of the depth of love for all sorts of reasons. Families fall out. There are deep rifts and relationships break down irrevocably. I have seen it in my own extended family. Others are left alone and with all the afflictions of loneliness. We hear a lot about what those are, especially for the elderly or housebound. How do we, who can extend the love we have been given to those who need it? Well, we do as Jesus asked us. For I was hungry, and you gave me food. I was thirsty, and you gave me drink. I was a stranger, and you welcomed me. That's from Matthew 25:35. It's that simple. For all of you who read or hear this, if we find one person who needs some love from our family, what a difference in our communities that would make.
We go on to letters, and we'll have the first one from you, please, Frieda.
This letter is headed A Sad Loss, and it's from Beverly Morgan of St Cross Road. Sir, the loss of an extremely hard-working and highly competent city councillor of the calibre of Guy Ashton serves to illustrate the fickleness of local elections. Only time will tell, but I believe those who fail to support him will rue the day.
And here's a testy letter from Chris Blackman, entitled Profiteering. Sir, regarding your article, Counting the Cost of Killer Asbestos. What a great advertisement for Irwin Mitchell. Oh, there, they've just had another mention. A terrible legacy of the area's industrial heritage, quotes. This lawyer is profiteering from gaining financial compensation from firms that employed people who suffered exposure to asbestos. But I would say, who knew at the time? We were all ignorant of the facts, and that goes for employers too. Hopefully, in a few years, we'll have a new compensation scandal. Were you a victim of lawyer profiteering? Tell us and we'll sue your lawyer for unfairly pursuing an unjust claim. And a few years later, were you a victim of a lawyer trying to sue you for pursuing an unjust claim, etc., etc.? Have you been in a car accident that was not your fault? The lawyer always wins, even if we don't. And Chris Blackman lives in Cheriton Road, in full flood in Winchester.
And the next letter comes from Jane Stevens, headed No Candidates. Sir, initially I was going to comment on Robert Marshall's letter about, quotes, the contempt of the body politic. Because like him, I neither saw nor heard any candidates and received no literature from the main parties either. The candidates were conspicuous by their absence. But then I wasn't surprised because certain representatives in my ward can't acknowledge an email asking for their help. Much to my amusement, the next letter in your column was headed Transparency. and who was the author, but the prospective candidate for my ward saying that he will continue to seek to represent, one day possibly, their views, whatever their political affiliations. Need I say more? And that's from Jane Stevens, Mews Lane, Winchester.
This letter is about the Handlebar Cafe and comes from Simon Lever of Juniper Close Badger Farm. Sir, a few weeks ago I had a letter published in the Chronicle praising the development of the Handlebar Cafe, together with a photo of the notice board at the site of the much-needed facility. Last week I climbed St Catherine's Hill once more and was delighted to see the foundations had been completed, awaiting the main cafe structures. Such a positive development, providing a break for walkers and cyclists alike, certainly after climbing up and down St Catherine's Hill, is most welcome. The delay in completion, due to the ground conditions which were mentioned in the Chronicle of May the 9th, will hopefully be overcome and be ready to greet customers for the summer months.
Political rage. Sir, it was not just Robert Marshall and Test Valley constituents that were neglected by the candidates in the recent council elections. Here in the Bishop's Waltham ward, I was not even lucky enough to have a vacuous leaflet, no doubt promising a strong and stable, fairer society for the many, not the few. In this country, democracy is a hard-won right that we must cherish. And although democracy doesn't guarantee good government, it does provide a peaceful way of getting rid of a bad one, without the need for civil unrest and loss of life, as we sadly see in many countries of the world. In order to show my support for democracy, I spoilt my ballot paper, writing, "No candidate has provided me with any information to make a choice." If the candidates do not have the time or inclination to engage with the electorate, how can we expect them to have the time and inclination to make the important decisions on our behalf on how the area should be run? If I had the time to properly serve the area, I would run myself as an independent next time. Others may have the time and be able to effect change. And that letter came from Andrew Flood, who lives in Winchester Road in Bishop's Waltham.
Surgery becoming a disgrace. Sir, is anyone able to throw light upon the proposed new surgery for St Clement's, which has been promised to its patients for several years now? The current building is a disgrace and simply not fit for purpose. It cannot be a pleasant working environment for the staff based there, and certainly is not a pleasant experience for patients of the practice to visit. It is shabby, worn out, and should have been demolished years ago, yet nothing ever seems to happen. It contrasts appallingly with the other modern practices in Winchester. Please, could we at least have a time frame for its replacement? That comes from Helen Etherington, St Swithin Street, Winchester.
Here we have a letter about Long Barn in Alsford, and it's from Andrew Hockings of Sun Lane, Alsford. Sir, re the Long Barn expansion plan, dividing Alsford, which was mentioned in the Chronicle of May the 3rd, as a long-term resident of Alsford and having read the Winchester District Local Plan, I agree that it is important to protect what is good about our town. But that doesn't mean standing still. And I strongly believe that entrepreneurial enterprises that attract visitors, employ local people, buy from other local businesses and contribute hundreds of pounds to the local economy should be supported and encouraged. Long Barn is the inspiration of a dynamic team and an asset to the town, enhancing the reputation of Alsford. I agree that Long Barn should be required to resolve its planning issues, but to be treated as a pariah is completely unacceptable. To accuse Long Barn of being an undermining influence, as some of the retailers would have us believe, is frankly absurd and misplaced. It does not reflect well on the town or the retail businesses on our main streets, and fails to understand or address the underlying issues. For example, the effect of internet shopping, local parking, changing consumer shopping habits. The world is changing, but too many of our local businesses appear to be in denial and are failing to remain relevant. For example, if they are targeting tourists, why are most businesses closed on Sundays and bank holidays when people are most likely to visit the area? If they are targeting the local community, why not promote themselves and maybe be a bit more welcoming? I have lived here for 23 years, so a smile and a greeting wouldn't go amiss. And where is the leadership from the Alresford Town Council's Economic and Tourism Committee and local chamber? Undermining the viability of a successful business will not result in more for everyone else. The quicker they get this, the quicker they will start working together for the greater good.
And this letter's headed Costly No Show and comes from Councillor David McLean. Sir, I yet again write about our Royal Hampshire County Hospital and a visit on a recent appointment with a CPAP nurse with five other patients to be fitted with a 2,000 piece of overnight test equipment. Only two turned up. No apologies from the others, just did not turn up. The cost given in the letter sent out to us for the missed appointment was £180. So, I asked the Trust why it cannot bill those who did not attend. That would ensure it changes the mindset and would put money back into NHS funds. And Councillor McLean is Councillor for Waltham and Durley and lives on Morley Drive in Bishops Waltham.
And this letter is headed A Tribute and it comes from Karen Barrett. Sir, I was very sorry to learn of the death of former County Reference Librarian Maurice McGrave. Maurice was for a number of years Membership Secretary of Winchester Film Society. I had joined the committee in the early 1990s and had a number of roles over the years. We showed films at the Guildhall when Winchester had no cinema, and then negotiated a fortnightly slot at the new Screen Cinema. We were all volunteers, fulfilling various roles, agreeing the programme, booking the films, designing the leaflet, etc. In those pre-digital times, we had our own team of projectionists too. We were a very mixed bunch, representing many professions, different opinions, and strong views where movies were concerned. In the main, it was a lot of fun, but when we had our dramas and crisis moments, Maurice was always there, totally organised and reliable, a much appreciated voice of calm, keeping our sometimes chaotic show on the road. Happy days. Rest in peace, Maurice. And that's from Karen Barrett, former chairman Winchester Film Society, Byron Avenue, Full Flood, Winchester.
If you wish to contact the Hampshire Chronicle, you can do so by telephoning 01962 860836, or you can email news@hampshirechronicle.co.uk, or you can write to the editor at 5 Upper Brook Street, Winchester, SO23 8AL. We now come to what's on. Next week, there are two good amateur shows going head-to-head in Winchester. The Chesil Theatre is performing The Children, a beautiful, thought-provoking play by Lucy Kirkwood, who wrote Chimerica, which was recently adapted for TV. And Winchester Musicals and Operatic Society takes to the stage of the Theatre Royal with Made in Dagenham, a musical based on the 2010 film of the same name about the sewing machinist's strike for equal pay in 1968. The Children runs from this Saturday, the 18th of May, to the following Saturday, with a 4 p.m. matinee on Sunday, the 19th. Made in Dagenham is on from Wednesday the 22nd to Saturday the 25th of May, and there are still tickets available for both productions. For the children, phone 0333 666 3366, and for Made in Dagenham, ring 01962 840 440. British and German voices will mingle at a charity concert on Saturday, June the 1st. Winchester Community Choir and Avanti Dilettanti from Gießen will perform at the United Church, Jewry Street, singing everything from Brahms to Steel I Span. Free tickets are available by emailing membership@winchestercommunitychoir.com. all one word, .co.uk. And there will be a retiring collection for the Mayor of Winchester's charities. We now come to the historical files. So, Frieda, can we please start with 200 years ago?
200 years ago, Monday, May the 10th, 1819. On Thursday, a dinner was given to the inhabitants of Avington in honour of the marriage of Lord Temple, eldest son of the Marquess and Marchioness of Buckingham. There is a little second item. That beautiful edifice, Southampton Castle, the ornament of the town and the pride of the late Marquess of Lansdowne, is now almost level with the ground. And we look at what was happening 100 years ago. Again, two short items. Saturday, May the 17th, 1919. On Saturday afternoon, a conference of those interested in the question of food control was held at the Guildhall, having been convened by the Winchester and District's Trades and Labour Council. The chair was occupied by the Mayor, Alderman A. Edmeads, who was supported on the platform by Mr. H. Sanders from the Ministry of Food. The Mayor, in his opening of the meeting, humorously remarked that the meeting was distinguished more by its quality than quantity. The second item, on Sunday and Thursday, the Baptist Church of City Road, Winchester, celebrated the double event of their 56th anniversary and the recognition of their new pastor, the Reverend W. A. Edwards, late of Poole. The services on Sunday were conducted by the Reverend Edwards and were very inspiring.
And now we move on to 50 years ago, to the edition dated May the 17th, 1969. First piece. Two Winchester residents, Mr. S. Wilde and Mr. J. Beckett, attended a conference of the Workers' Educational Association in London and decided that they would like to form a local branch. At first, they found some difficulty in finding the right person to help them, but eventually they were put in touch with Mr. Cyril Robinson, at that time a housemaster at Winchester College. Mr. Robinson received their suggestion with enthusiasm, and after a few preliminaries, the first meeting was held in April 1919, Mr. Robinson having taken an active passion to bring this about. Throughout its existence, the Winchester branch has benefited greatly from the continued association with Winchester College, and many of its most distinguished lecturers were from the college staff. And this second piece is all about Sparshalt. Although fears had been expressed that the village of Sparshalt would die unless further development was permitted, there was no justification for the provision of additional services and road improvements. Mr. E.S. Benfield, the Divisional Planning Officer, told a meeting of the Southern Divisional Planning Committee at Eastleigh on Monday. Statistics showed, in fact, that the population of the parish had risen from 633 in 1951 to 697 in 1961 and to 790 in 1966. Sparshall, because of its close proximity to Winchester, would continue to act as a dormitory village to Winchester, with the majority of the working population commuting daily. Other local villages, such as Littleton and Kingsworthy, served a similar function, and these would be the subject of village plans which were likely to permit some expansion. Mr. Benfield said, "The facilities in Sparshold, were adequate for a village of its size, taking into account its nearness to Winchester, and to expand Sparshold further would involve considerable public expenditure in the provision of services, particularly main drainage, and improvements to the road system."
And now, 25 years ago, excuse me, and this is Friday, May the 13th, 1994. Fire engulfed the Royal Winchester Golf Club's headquarters in the early hours of Wednesday morning, wiping out a century of history. "It's heartbreaking," club captain Richard Parkhurst said as he surveyed the smouldering ruins. Mr. Parkhurst, 48, was alerted soon after the fire was spotted and hurried to the scene. He said, "The sight of the flames this morning was really frightening. But what is really upsetting is not that, but the history that has gone up with this blaze. Cups, trophies, honours boards have all gone. There is nothing that can't be replaced except these." As he spoke, several hours after the fire, club members were turning up to survey the scene. "It's a bad day," one said. Shock was the emotion of most. But some golfers actually went out onto the course, which was untouched. The fire service is investigating the blaze and said that until this was complete, it would be premature to speculate on the cause. Divisional officer Terry Burton said firefighters got the first call at 1:58 a.m. The first crew at the scene was from Winchester, by which time the fire was well established. Entry was made, but seeing the state of the building, they quickly evacuated the crew just before the roof collapsed, he said, adding that the timely withdrawal was thanks to the experience of sub-officer Nick James leading the crew. There were 6 pumps in attendance, 2 from Winchester and 1 each from Romsey, Redbridge, Alsford and Sutton Scotney. And now the second item deals with local elections. Reluctant Winchester Liberal Democrats have been forced to take absolute power at the Guildhall following their spectacular city council election gains of last Thursday. All the other political groups have rebuffed new council leader Alan Mitchell's call for a continuation of the power-sharing consensus politics that has directed Guildhall deliberations over the past few years. This meant a complete overhaul of Winchester City Council's leadership, with 4 out of the 6 main committees now led by a new chairman. Dr. Mitchell takes over at Policy and Finance from the 6-year-long leadership reign of Conservative John Taylor. Ian Bidgood replaces the retired John Cloyne at Housing. Norman Hibdidge replaces the long-serving Pat Edwards at Planning. And most controversially, County Councillor Pam Peskett takes over at Traffic and Engineering from the retired Jock MacDonald. Bert Spencer becomes Deputy Leader of the Council. George Fothergill and Brian Collin will continue to lead the Amenities and Environmental Health Committees, respectively. Last Thursday's net total was 5 electoral gains for the Liberal Democrats.
Now we come to editorial comment, followed by first person.
This piece is headed by the usual Hampshire Chronicle logo, underneath which it says, "Our 246th year." The subject is the importance of journalism. Today, the Chronicle proudly backs the Journalism Matters campaign. It is a campaign which highlights the power of local newspapers to campaign for positive change in the communities they serve. As part of the campaign, today, the industry holds a hashtag Trusted News Day to show readers exactly how trusted news is gathered, produced, and distributed over the course of the day. Hopefully, it will provide readers with an insight into our industry, one that is fast-paced and ever-changing. News is now truly a 24-hour industry, and there are many more ways to consume it, whether that be through newspapers, radio, television, or straight from social media. But the importance of local newspapers remains as a source for trusted news within our community. Local newspapers also have the power to pull a community together or simply create a platform for debate, as we see so often in our letters pages. We hope that you will take the time to support this campaign.
And first person this week marks the return of Ron Allison with an article headed Three Cheers for Archie. This is the first opportunity I've had for some months now to add to the joy of your lives by way of my monthly column. There's no need for me to bore you with the reasons for my absence, but it is somewhat reassuring that some of you seem to have noticed. There are even those who've checked me on the high street saying, "I wonder if you'd died." But one added that he imagined the paper would have mentioned it if I had passed on. Well, who knows? Anyway, my sincere thanks to those of you who did say words to the effect of, "I missed you," all three of you. So now, down to business. Has anything really important happened in our part of the world since I was last with you? Well, yes. Southampton Football Club have survived to live another season in the Premier League, and they will definitely do better in 2019-20. And Hampshire have started the cricket season in good form, at least with the white ball. Switching to politics, the Liberal Democrats have the most reason to be the most satisfied of all the various parties after the recent local elections. Winchester City is one to have seen control pass from the Conservatives to the Lib Dems. How the Prime Minister will be looking back on recent days is more difficult to say. Not with any great pleasure, I imagine, but there's no doubt that she is a tenacious survivor. There are some, not all in opposition, who find that extremely frustrating. And there seem to be many of us who are beginning to despair of our politicians giving the sort of leadership the country needs. So, to leave us all on a more cheerful note, I have left the best to last this week. Undoubtedly, the greatest bit of good cheer for many of us was the birth of Archie Harrison Mountbatten Windsor, first child for the Duke and Duchess of Sussex and eighth great-grandchild for the Queen and Prince Philip. The informality of the announcement of his birth and his subsequent first appearance suggests that Archie will have as normal an upbringing as any boy could in his position. Now, that doesn't necessarily mean that he'll go to a state school, but equally his schooling will not automatically have to mean Eton. Prince Harry has already defined his own style of what could be called royal informality, with earlier Princess Anne having shown with her own children, Peter and Zara Phillips, how it's possible for young royals to lead comparatively private lives. Somewhat like justice, the monarchy does need to be seen to be done, and with the present style, the palace does seem to have got the balance just about right. Looking back, it's hard to imagine Prince Charles coming out to meet the press and telling them of the birth of Prince William. I doubt, too, that he would have said, as did Harry, that, quotes, "this little thing is to die for and I'm over the moon." At the same time, I have no doubt that Prince Charles approves of this contemporary style. It was best summed up by the beautiful photograph of Archie along with his parents and his maternal grandmother being introduced to his beaming great-grandparents, one for the family album. Putting it another way, I suspect there are many of us that, who like feeling they are just like us. But nevertheless, we still want a decent helping of pomp and circumstance to brighten our lives. I finish, then, by offering our congratulations to the Duke and Duchess of Sussex, Harry and Meghan, and with 3 cheers for Archie.
And now we go over to an alternative look at the news, Belgarum. And he starts with the pudding returns. And there's a picture of a funny little cup pudding. A Winchester restaurant is to bring back a historic dessert named after the city. Winchester pudding would have once been part of any local cook's repertoire, but it has disappeared from recipe books over the years. Now, over 100 years since it was created, celebrity chef Rick Stein is putting it back on the menu, and in aid of a good cause. A traditionally local pudding, the steamed dish, bursting with fruit and spices, dates back to 1906. Bringing a slightly modern twist to the traditional recipe, the pudding will consist of a light steamed sponge packed with currants, golden sultanas, and topped with a butterscotch and Grand Marnier sauce. Mm. So it sounds
good.
Pretty nice. On, there are several bits here. Kidston's legacy. Many readers are quick to comment when a store closes in Winchester. The sight of boarded up windows or white paint smeared to block the lifeless interior is a blight on a vibrant high street such as Winchester's. So Belgarum was delighted to see a Winchester shop that had unfortunately closed down think about what it was leaving behind for visitors. As previously reported, Cath Kidston closed its door last month with a sign in the doorway reading, "Farewell Winchester." Since then, colourful posters line the windows, adding some brightness to what would have been another stain on the city centre. Belgarum is unaware of what new venture, if any, will occupy the unit near the Buttercross, but we hope others unfortunate enough to have to close down follow in Cath Kidston's footsteps and think about what they will leave behind. Thirdly, new challenge for Wayne Bridge. Former Saints star Wayne Bridge has decided to tackle a 156-mile ultra-marathon through the Sahara Desert. The ex-left back, now aged 38, who was born in Winchester, grew up in Stanmore and attended King's School, has said that winning Channel 4's SAS Who Dares Wins has inspired him to take on the mammoth task. Wayne will take on the 6-day Marathon des Sables in Morocco next year and has been described as the toughest foot race on the planet. The retired footballer will be raising money for Walking with the Wounded, a charity which helps injured British Armed Forces servicemen and women adjust to civilian life. And finally, switch of support. Ex-Winchester MP Mark Oughton tells Belgarum he is backing Change UK in the Euro elections next week, frustrated by the current state of politics. His former colleague, who replaced him as Lib Dem parliamentary candidate in the 2010 general election in Winchester, will be disappointed. Martin Todd is fourth on the Lib Dem list and so hopeful of being elected to the European Parliament. Lighting up time ends today, Friday the 17th of May, at 5:13 a.m. and begins again at 8:52 p.m. On Wednesday the 22nd of May, it ends at 5:06 a.m. and begins again at 8:59 p.m. If you know someone who is sight impaired and would like to receive our recordings, or if you have a problem with the recording you have received from us, please telephone Mary Davis on 01962 711 998. That's 01962 711 998. And now we continue with items of general news. So over to you, Frieda.
This item is headed Endangered Breed Sees Important Birth at Marwell. Marwell Zoo is celebrating a small victory in the battle to save an endangered species. A female Okapi calf has been born at the zoo safe and well. The precious calf has been named by keepers as Niari, which means rare, and is an area in the Democratic Republic of the Congo where okapis are found in tropical rainforests. First-time mum Daphne and Niari are both doing well and are currently off show out of the public eye to ensure they bond and the calf settles during the nesting period. Marwell animal keeper Phil Robbins said, "We know guests are desperate to see the pair, but we want to make sure Daphne and Niari enjoy some peace and quiet, as this is essential in the first few weeks of the nesting period." Phil explained, "Okapis are very shy animals. As such, we prefer to keep okapi dams and calves in an isolated environment to reduce noise and stress levels. Okapis give birth to a single calf after a 14-month gestation period. An okapi calf can be on its feet and suckling within half an hour of being born. In the wild, the mother will leave her calf in a hiding place to nest, returning regularly to allow the calf to nurse. Uniquely, okapi calves defecate for the first time after 30 to 40 days. A theory behind this adaptation is that it helps keep predators from sniffing out the hidden newborn until the calf has grown and gained strength. Okapis are relatives of the giraffe. They have thick, reddish-brown black coats, and like giraffes, okapis have the same body shape with long necks, long black tongues, and males have horn-like ossicones. That's a new word, on their head. Their hindquarters and front legs are black and white striped, reminiscent of a zebra. There are two delightful pictures. There is the mother okapi, very sort of brown in colour, with stripy socks all the way up her legs, and the little baby Niari, very much more black, but also with the stripy socks all the way up to the top of her legs.
Afghan veteran and Carol Vorderman in self-help podcast. A Winchester soldier who lost his legs in a bomb blast in Afghanistan has joined forces with a TV celebrity to share their experiences of embracing technology and social media to overcome adversity. Simon Harmer from Kingsworthy was severely injured in 2009, but only 2 months later was walking on prosthetic legs, thanks to determination and self-belief. During his recovery, he developed the idea of a series of podcasts featuring celebrities and members of the public who've overcome significant physical and mental challenges. Simon said, "Throughout my rehabilitation, the days were busy with visits, doctors and physical recovery, but at night it became a very lonely and sad place. I wanted to put my headphones on and listen to something positive that would give me a sliver of hope and to be part of a positive conversation." And now Simon is working with The Drive Project, a creative social enterprise headed by theatre producer Alice Driver, who was the first person in the UK to use the arts to support rehabilitation of veterans. Simon shares his experiences with TV presenter and mathematician Carol Vorderman. The path to success has not been easy for either of them, and they've both suffered setbacks and self-doubt, a journey which they want to share. Simon was seriously injured while clearing compounds and thought he would die. He said, "I'd only been married for 87 days and I couldn't stand the thought of leaving my wife alone. There's being scared, but then there's experiencing all-encompassing physical fear, like I felt in Afghanistan." At Selly Oak Military Hospital, a nurse advised him to try and find three good things that have come from the day, such as getting a phone call from a friend, a technique that he still uses today. Carol Vorderman's celebrity experiences have also given her the motivation to give something back, and she's used the obstacles in her way as determination to become a strong female role model. Carol looks for the positive, but is ready to fight when there's a negative. She added, "Through the podcasts, people like Simon can light up a room, making lives better and helping others to celebrate what they have." Alice Driver said, "The podcast seems to create meaningful and inspiring conversations between two unlikely individuals to talk about their experiences, careers, challenges, and how they've handled resilience in their own lives, to act as an inspiration and support to those listening." And there's a rather nice picture there of Simon with Carol Vorderman beaming at the camera and obviously very happy with the work that they're doing.
New county leader is announced. The new leader of Hampshire County Council has been announced. Keith Manns, current deputy leader and executive lead member for Children's Services, is set to become the new leader of the county council. The news comes after current leader Roy Perry said he will step down on May the 17th. An official announcement is expected to be made at the annual general meeting that will take place at the County Council in Winchester on May the 17th at 10 a.m. But it has been confirmed that Hampshire County Council Conservatives Group have elected Councillor Manns as their new leader, meaning he is now certain to be elected as leader of the County Council next week, given the Conservative majority on the council of 56 seats to 19 Lib Dems and 2 Labour. Councillor Manns represents Brockenhurst in the New Forest and had previously represented Lyndhurst. He was an MP for Wyre in Lancashire between 1987 and 1997 and PPS to the Secretary of State for Health. He previously served as an RAF officer and then became a senior executive with the John Lewis Group.
This is headed, "Church's circus theme inspires a great show." They rolled up in their hundreds to support a Winchester Church's Community Day. Around 800 people were at St Paul's in full flood to see it transformed into a circus big top and help raise £5,500 towards its improvement project, which is soon to start. Aerial acrobatics brought the day to a jaw-dropping finale. Phoebe Hoyle of Cirque du Silk wowed a packed church as she hung upside down from the trapeze, winding herself through a hoop and strips of fabric to reach dizzying heights. There were performances by children and local organisations, Florian School of Dance, as well as youngsters from St Paul's Preschool and Western Church School. A mixed age group of youngsters supported by Integrate Dance performed Come Alive from blockbuster film The Greatest Showman. A Pimm's and beer tent and barbecue, as well as a clown cafe, toasted marshmallows and drifts of candy floss, ensured visitors weren't hungry as they listened to St Paul's very own barbershop quartet and music from the city's best-known busker, Marvin Naylor. The intrepid rector, Canon Peter Seal, dressed in a generously sized clown outfit and tried out the bouncy castle. A fun dog show brought out the human and canine competitive spirit as the judges, including City MP Steve Bryan and his daughter Emily, assessed who looked most like their dog. This year's event was organised by Adrienne Marsden, who talked about the circus idea. "My daughter Kat, who's 10, was very keen that this year we take the helm of organising the event, and so had to come up with our theme. We both thoroughly enjoyed The Greatest Showman, and it struck me that by having a circus topic, we could allow people's theatrical imagination to run wild. There are actually two pictures. There's one outside the church with a lot of very happy-looking people, including the Mayor Frank Pearson and Steve Bryan, all dressed up in lovely circusy outfits. And then there's another one inside with Canon Seal in the front in his clown's outfit and various other people dressed up in circus costume underneath a wonderful sort of hanging design of strips of fabric.
Rock Sessions. An international bass player has joined Winall Rock School to provide new sessions for budding musicians. Andrea Goldsworthy, who's toured the world with Paloma Faith, will now host classes on Wednesday evenings at the Community Centre in Garbutt Road. She'll be joined by Matt Church, who's run band workshops on the Isle of Wight for several years. The service was launched on May the 1st and will be part of the school's programme of commercial band workshops, which was set up after hearing from students who want to experience playing with others in a band. Andrea said, "I know how much I would have enjoyed this kind of opportunity when I was an enthusiastic young guitarist. It's difficult to imagine the thrill of playing together with other like-minded people, particularly when you're also creating your own songs. Matt and I will share some of the lessons we've learnt through our own experience. We'll help them with the transition from playing an instrument to working together in bands and making music. And our knowledge will help make this easier and, more importantly, good fun. The workshops will be designed to cater for different levels of musical abilities and ages, and holiday clubs for the younger age groups are also planned."
Bees swarm to new biz startup hive. Sounds a bit complicated, but here we go. A swarm of bees resting on a Winchester building caused a buzz in the city centre. The front wall of the aptly named Incubator Hive space in Staple Gardens was first covered by a large group at around noon on Tuesday. Staff were told to sit tight and wait for the bees to leave on their own. But Chief Operating Officer George Scott Welsh told the Chronicle he had no problem with the swarm being there. He said, "It's got people talking about us, and of course we are bee-themed and sell ourselves as a hive, so I say it's good marketing. When we opened, we had a girl in a giant bee costume. I'm blaming her for attracting them 100%, said George. Watch manager Kev Robson said a fire crew helped a beekeeper remove the estimated 15,000 swarm for relocation in the countryside.
Here we are about a house's plan for a back garden. A developer wants to build 8 homes in the garden of a Georgian house in Winchester. Alfred Holmes proposes to erect 8 houses in the large back garden of Goodworth House in St Cross Road, St Cross. The scheme consists of 1 2-bedroom, 3 3-bedroom, 2 4-bedroom and 2 5-bedroom dwellings. It would involve creating an access off St Cross Road and the relocation of the frontage wall at Goodworth House. So far, there have been 7 letters written in support with no objections to the City Council Planning Department. Nicholas Henderson of Ranley Road expressed support. "As a long-time resident of St Cross, it's pleasing to see such a well-thought-through development that will add to the character of St Cross." Former City Councillor and Planning Consultant Ian Tate said, "I know this site particularly well and I've been watching carefully what is being planned here. The earlier scheme didn't seem to work at all and was something I couldn't support. However, architect Hugh Thomas has come up with a much more sympathetic scheme, which I feel respects the character and massing of the buildings in the area far better. Although it would be great if the garden could be left undeveloped, I realise that this is an unrealistic expectation. So I think that the current proposals are as good as could be hoped for under the circumstances. While I can't speak for the governors of St Faith's School, where I am a governor, I welcome, as a private individual, the applicant's offer to give over some land to the school, which will really help St Faith's. The nearest business is St Cross Garage on Cripstead Lane, and proprietor Tim Venters said he would be unaffected. I've been here for 30 years in July, and I didn't think it would last this long as an open garden space. It's going to be built on sooner or later. It's a vast open space. But I don't think some neighbours are happy about it.
And here's some coverage of the city's military connections. It's entitled Regiment's Military Challenge at Camp. A tough but rewarding day was had by soldiers at Worthy Down Camp near Winchester. For all those serving in the Adjutant General's Corps, that's the AGC, it was the return of its Triple Crown Challenge. In its 22nd year, it aims to test the team's military skills and battle fitness and to encourage the AGC's esprit de corps. Some 170 teams entered the contest, including 65 military skills teams. All have their soldiering ability tested, whether it be in the 12-mile march and shoot, or a military skills event, which also includes a 4-to-5-mile march. Lieutenant General Stuart Skeets, Deputy Commander Joint Forces Command Brunsham, hosted the prize giving and presented the trophies. The overall winners of those in the military skills element of the competition were the Defence College of Logistics Policing Administration, which is based in Winchester, and the overall winners of the march and shoot and best overall team of the competition were 7 Para of the Royal Horse Artillery. Major Ian McLeish, the event coordinator, said, "The event so far has been really good. It's been a great occasion. There's been a few drops of rain, but that hasn't dampened spirits too much. This is a great opportunity for everyone to get together, reunite as a corps, and to forge relations to help us serve the rest of the army better." And there's a very amusing photograph there of some soldiers in full kit, including packs and helmets, jumping into a great big swimming pool and clambering out of the other side. So good luck to them rather than me.
Austin Dinner. Join Jane Austen's family at their ancestral home, Chawton House, for a very special Regency dinner. You can enjoy a menu inspired by the food eaten by Jane herself and dishes mentioned in her writing. Guests are invited to join Caroline Jane Knight, Austen's fifth great-niece, and her family for a £395 a head dinner at the Great House, owned by Jane's brother, Edward Austen Knight. Presented by Austen Heritage, all proceeds will go to Chawton House and the Jane Austen Literacy Foundation. Caroline Jane will host the Jane Austen Heritage Dinner on Friday, June the 21st, alongside her parents, Jeremy and Carol Knight, and her brother, Paul Edward Knight. Tickets are £395 each, or £650 a pair. Hurry! Only 5 seats are available. Tickets can be purchased from www.austinheritage.com. All profits will be donated equally to the Jane Austen Literacy Foundation and Chawton House. The family will be dressed in Regency attire. Guests are welcome to do the same, although this is not compulsory. The Regency dinner is inspired by Austen Knight family recipes and the food eaten by Jane herself, with dinner being served at the same dining room table used by Jane. Guests will enjoy a private viewing of Austen Knight family heirlooms not on show to the public. Caroline Jane said, "I'm thrilled to be hosting with my family such a special event at Chawton House."
This is headed Festival Warning Over Camp Litter. A Winchester festival has warned revellers to clean up after themselves or risk the major event not returning. Boomtown Fair, held on the Matterley Estate, issued the warning as it joined calls to stop retailers selling single-use tents. A spokesman took to the festival's Twitter account to urge festival goers at summer events to take their tents home with them. The spokesman said, "We are simply not willing to run the festival in the future unless this radically changes. Please, please share this really important message for the future of festivals and the future of the planet. We've all seen the absolute devastation left at the end of festivals. Broken plastic airbeds, discarded camping chairs, and cheap flooded tents that have only been used once. It's absolutely heartbreaking. Unfortunately, landfill is exactly where most of this will go. Tents are multi-material, so practically impossible to recycle. The average tent is the equivalent of 8,750 plastic straws or 250 plastic pint cups. The move by organisers has been supported on Twitter. One user called Dawny said, "I'm so glad to see festivals trying to do something about this." Another, called Splodge, added, "Excellent, about time. Zero reason to leave waste. Zero reason to act in such a despicable way. Zero reason to hurt our environment in such a careless and ignorant way." Anne-Marie Fern said, "Well done, Boomtown Fair, for being the first to say that it won't put on the festival if the punters don't take their tents home. The move comes less than a month after plans to give permanent permission to the festival were rebuffed by councillors in favour of a temporary extension. The decision now means the site can host the annual 63,000 capacity festival as well as the Tough Mudder obstacle course until the end of 2024. And there is a photograph which is simply appalling. Right across the downs, all you can see is heaps and heaps of litter. And in the foreground, there are three abandoned tents. Truly awful.
Cyclists pedal against poverty in Sierra Leone. Bells of a different sort rang at Winchester Cathedral last Saturday when cyclists from across the region united to pedal against poverty in the launch of Christian Aid Week. Cyclists took part in sponsored rides from their homes to the cathedral, enjoyed a big brekkie together before joining in a mass cycling loop at 11 o'clock, calling for Sierra Leone's debts accrued to tackle the Ebola crisis to be dropped. Christian Aid Week, which will end on May the 18th this year, is highlighting the healthcare crisis in Sierra Leone, where 10 mums a day die giving birth, and 1 in 10 health workers were killed by the world's worst Ebola outbreak between 2014 and 2016. Repayments of international debts taken out to tackle Ebola are now hampering the country's ability to rebuild its healthcare services. The Dean of Winchester, the very Reverend Catherine Ogle, led a blessing at the start of the mass loop. She said, "Christian Aid is currently tackling poverty in 35 countries around the world. Sometimes the problems faced by communities living in poverty can be seen as overwhelming. But when we come together, the great power of people helps us believe that dignity, equality and justice are possible for everyone. And we can have some fun at the same time." Sierra Leone is the most dangerous country in the world to give birth. If there's no clinic in the village, pregnant women can wait up to 8 hours before an ambulance arrives. Others travel to hospital on the back of a hired motorbike. But the poorest have no choice but to walk for hours on foot. Many women and babies do not survive the journey, particularly in the hunger months from May to December when food is scarce. Churches across Hampshire have raised over £167,000 for Christian Aid in 2018. And as well as the cycling event, hundreds of local churches will this year be completing door-to-door collections, hosting other big brekkies or holding a range of fundraising activities. And there's a rather lovely picture there, taken with the front of Winchester Cathedral as the backdrop, with five hardy and smiling cyclists surrounding the Dean, Catherine Ogle.
TV expert helps raise 8K. A charity event supported by a BBC gardening expert has raised more than £8,000 to help fund local projects in Winchester. This year's annual Garden and Craft Fair, hosted by the charity Winchester Go LD, saw a record number of visitors to Katie and Simon Brown's garden in Headbourne Worthy. Pippa Greenwood, known for being on BBC Radio 4's Gardener's Question Time since 1994, helped open the fair and was joined by Mayor of Winchester, Councillor Frank Pearson. Organiser Ross Nell said, "This was the charity's fourth garden fair, but this year we had nearly three times as many visitors and accordingly raised much more money. This was definitely in part due to Pippa Greenwood, who kindly agreed to spend the morning with us, handling, in her inimitable, witty style, horticultural questions from the audience, including a question about slugs from the Mayor, Councillor Frank Pearson. The profit of £8,400 is to help fund local projects for members of Winchester Go LD, who offer free memberships to adults with learning disabilities in the Winchester area." And there's a picture of Pippa standing behind a table, ready to take people's questions. She's very well wrapped up in jumpers and scarves and looks quite windswept. So I think it was probably one of those very windy days we had recently. And there's the mayor with his chain on. She's just in the middle of answering his question. I'd really like to know what the answer about slugs was.
I think we'd all like to know that one about slugs. Yes. Arch enemy. This is called Police Appeal Over Farm Building Cold Case. Police have today released a facial reconstruction image in a bid to identify a man whose body was found in a farm building in Mitchell-Dover in 2017. Officers searched the disused barn off Baisley Copse Lane on December 1st, 2017, as part of inquiries into an unrelated burglary. Inside, they found human remains, along with items including a sleeping bag, a rucksack, a Sony Walkman, a Martina Cole novel, and a Winchester Street Atlas, and they are thought to have been there for at least a year. Despite extensive forensic and DNA examinations, officers have been unable to identify this man and are now appealing for help from the public. Following a Home Office post-mortem and various scientific tests, police believe the man was white, age ranging from his 30s to his 60s, around 5 feet 6 inches tall, short, fair brown hair, and that he had a narrow face with an overbite. The cause of death was unascertained, but there were no signs that the man had been attacked or restrained. Detectives are treating the death as unexplained but non-suspicious. Detective Constable Claire Hughes said, "Our priority is to identify this man, make contact with those who knew him, and give them some degree of closure. We believe that the man had been sleeping rough in the barn and was possibly following the railway line to walk to or from Winchester."
Historical fire helmet loaned to Town Museum. The grandson of long-serving Alresford fireman Harry Godsell presented his brass helmet, silver long service medals and silver cigarette box on long-term loan to Alresford Museum. Harry's grandson, Roger Cox, said, "The family are proud to present Harry's artefacts to the museum in memory of my grandfather's long public service to the community." Harry Godsell, an engineer who worked for Hankins Garage in West Street, Alresford, for many years, died in 1953. Hankins is now the Co-op supermarket. Harry had also been a member of the Alresford Fire Service for nearly 40 years, holding several awards for long and faithful service. In his younger days, he'd served in the Winchester Force, and during the First World War, served with yeomanry and later transferred to the Royal Army Service Corps, where he attained the rank of sergeant. Robin Atkins, chairman of the Town Trust, welcomed the artefacts to the museum at the former fire station at the bottom of Broad Street and hoped that this might encourage other residents to follow suit, with other local artefacts being presented to the museum. And a nice photograph accompanies that, showing very proud grandson Roger Cox handing over a long service medal to Aylesford Museum staff.
Historic pub hailed as best in the county. A Chandler's Ford pub has won a national award for being the best pub in Hampshire. The Hiltonbury Farmhouse, North Millersdale, has been awarded the title of Hampshire County winner in the National Pub and Bar Awards for 2019. The independent pub opened its doors to the public in the 16th century and is the oldest building in Chandler's Ford. It also boasts a dog-friendly bar, where at least 25 seats are available to reserve for owners. Owner Rob Preston said, "It is an amazing validation of all the hard work put in by the staff for us to receive this award. The service provided and the standard of food is bar none, and I'm absolutely thrilled on behalf of all the team." The pub has now been entered into the regional and national awards that will take place on Wednesday, May the 22nd in London. And that's accompanied by a picture of the Hiltonbury Farmhouse, which is indeed a really handsome old building with barley sugar chimneys pots and little curlicue barge boards and sweet little windows. It really looks worth a visit.
School Vegetable Garden Project. Year 5 and 6 children at Barton Stacey Church of England School have embarked on an ambitious project to create their own mini Victorian kitchen garden and well-being area. They first thought of the idea following a visit to Mottisfont House's newly opened Victorian kitchen garden and held a Dragon's Den-style competition to determine which team could create the best designed space for the school. Gardens for Life, a team comprising Eleanor Mallinson, Archie Whiskard and May Burnett, won with their garden title Green Horizon. The garden is filled with sensory and peaceful elements to help the children flourish and maintain a healthy mind, body and spirit.
Chester Under-14's hockey team impress at Nationals. Winchester Under-14s finished the season with a win and two defeats at the national finals at Reading Hockey Club. They qualified by winning the South West Pool in March and were drawn in the strongest of the two groups of four alongside Surbiton and Repton. Winchester didn't quite reach the performance levels that they've shown throughout the season though, and finished third. The Winchester boys were disappointed but can be very proud of a tremendous season, because as well as qualifying for the national finals, they also won the Hampshire League and Cup double and the Mercian League. And that's a picture of 17 squad members, fine-looking young athletes, beaming at the camera and basking in their success.
Night fires protecting the darling buds of May. And I'll start by describing the picture that accompanies this item. It's a very striking photograph, very atmospheric, of a frosty night in a vineyard near Cheriton. The young vines are planted with supports, and alongside each support is a flare, some kind of flame that will just keep the heat up enough to protect those little buds coming out. And you can see the frost is sparkling, but the flares are really, really striking. So accompanying this, it says frost protection at night for the new buds at Rames Vineyard near Cheriton. The atmospheric image was captured by Cheriton photographer Simon J. Newman on Sunday morning, May the 5th. Grange Farm at Titchbourne, near Aylesford, has diversified into winemaking, with two fields now set aside for vines. The nature of the English climate is such that cold nights can damage, even destroy, young tender shoots well into June. Hampshire now has a number of successful vineyards producing high-quality, usually white wine, including Hattingley Valley near Alresford and three choirs at Wickham, Danebury, Cottonworth and at Hambledon in the Meon Valley. The county's chalky soil is very similar to that of the Champagne region in northern France. Global warming over the next 20 to 30 years is expected to make the local climate even more conducive to wine growing, and the number of vineyards and acreage in production is expected to grow.
Keats Poetry. Hampshire Cultural Trust has opened a children's poetry competition to celebrate the 200th anniversary of John Keats' visit to Winchester. Judges will split entries into three age categories: 4 to 7 years old, 8 to 11 years old, and 12 to 16 years old. Entries can be made online via the Trust's website or by sending a poem through the post. The winners and runners-up will be announced at an awards ceremony at the City Museum on September the 29th, and an exhibition of entries will be held at the museum from September the 13th.
Now here's some news from one of our local schools. School receives grant for new science classroom. The Westgate School is celebrating a major grant from the Wolfson Foundation. The grant's been awarded to the school for its new science laboratory and equipment to further extend and enhance science provision in the All Through School. The Wolfson Foundation is a charity awarding grants to support and promote excellence in several fields, including science and medicine. Since it was first established in 1955, it's awarded grants of over £900 million. The school has already fundraised to transform a classroom into a fully functioning science lab, and the grant of £46,000 represents about half of the cost for the basic works. Every day, 150 pupils across years 5 to 11 will be able to perform practical science work. This project aims to facilitate lifelong learning and enjoyment of science learning, making sure the current and next generation has a better environment to enjoy science. And there's a picture there, which is probably the dullest picture we've had all day, of a completely empty classroom with nothing on the walls, but some very pretty red chairs.
Diabetes Project. Winchester and Eastleigh Diabetes UK support group donated £3,000 to a research project on the inner workings of blood vessels. Winchester Mayor Frank Pearson presented Diabetes UK with a cheque on behalf of the group towards research being carried out by Dr. Aranzazu Shamuro Yoganes, I hope I've pronounced that correctly, from Imperial College London. Damage to blood vessels is common in people with diabetes, and it can lead to complications such as sight loss. The research is looking to uncover new ways to restore blood vessels back to full health in people with diabetes. Dave Pomfrey, chairman of the Winchester Group, said, "We want to fund this research because one of our committee members knows someone with type 1 diabetes who has become partially sighted in his early 20s. This research project appealed to the committee, as eye problems can affect anyone living with diabetes. As well as raising money for important research projects such as these, the local group helps support local people living with diabetes and meets regularly." He said, "Please come along to our next meeting on Tuesday 11th of June at the Dovetail Centre, Chandler's Ford Methodist Church at 7 p.m. if you'd like to know more about the condition and how to manage it."
This is about a grant for Hampshire in the fight against crime. The government has given Hampshire Police a seven-figure grant to help the battle against serious crime. Hampshire Police will receive £1.26 million from a £100 million serious violence fund. Home Secretary Sajid Javid announced that 12.4 million will be distributed to 18 forces dealing with high levels of violent crime, including Hampshire. It comes after 51 million was announced for the forces before Easter for additional officer deployments, improved intelligence, and short-term operational actions, such as targeting habitual knife carriers. The announcement comes ahead of the first meeting of a new ministerial task force on serious youth violence, chaired by the Prime Minister in Downing Street yesterday. Mr. Javid said, "I've been doing everything in my power to ensure we have the strongest possible response to tackle violent crime, and law enforcement plays a key role in this. This means forces can take urgent action, including more officers on duty in the worst affected areas." And there is a rather disturbing photograph of several guns which have been disassembled and spread out on a sheet, and they do look seriously intimidating.
Family bike ride. This year's South Downs National Park Family Ride has been confirmed. The event will run on June the 9th, starting from Abbey Gardens in Winchester at 10 o'clock in the morning. Participants of all ages will be able to ride a traffic-free cycle circuit as many times as they want within an hour. The family ride will mark the opening of the Winchester Criterium and Cycle Fest before the racing starts on the 1 kilometre circuit.
Spectacular City Fashion Week. Winchester has staged its annual celebration of style. The city's Fashion Week returned for the ninth year with an array of events including a catwalk show, fashion fair, talks, workshops and other events. There were talks on everything from Whitchurch silk mill and fashion tattooing to a talk on the future of the high street for shopping. Students from the university and Winchester School of Art got involved, including taking over space in the Brooks for pop-up shops during the week. And that's accompanied by a photograph of young models on the catwalk, the young models being two little lads of about 3 or 4 years old. They appear to be wearing grey velvet suits with bow ties. They are watched by their proud mothers, and they are grinning from ear to ear, so I imagine they're really enjoying themselves.
Have you got another one, Frieda?
Not really very interesting.
All right, we'll go over
let
to
John do
then. Yes, we've just got a few minutes left.
Yes, I can't guarantee this is really interesting, but I'll give it a go to lighten it up. It's about the probation service.
Oh.
Yeah, no. Probation service at risk due to staff shortage. The quality of the probation service in Hampshire is being put at risk due to difficulties in the recruitment of officers and financial pressures, a report has revealed. Inspectors have given Hampshire and Isle of Wight Community Rehabilitation Company, that's the local CRC, an overall good rating, meaning that the CRC, which supervises low and medium risk offenders, is the first organisation of its kind to achieve this second highest grade. But the report issued by Her Majesty's Inspectorate of Probation raises concerns over the quality of the service and says that efforts to recruit new staff have proved difficult. Consequently, average caseloads rose in January, the report says. Her Majesty's Chief Inspector of Probation, Dame Glenys Stacey, says the CRC no longer has the quality and calibre of staff to deliver an effective service. But InterServe, the owner of Purple Futures, which owns the CRC, hit back, saying that they remain committed to protecting the public and are recruiting new staff. And there's another two columns of that, but I think we'll leave it
yeah,
there.
Yeah, I think, in fact, we are coming to the end.
I think you get the point. Yeah.
Yes, we'll conclude the extracts for this week and thank our editors, Angela Ling, Carol Fraser, Jane Thomas and Sue Ganaway, and thanks to our copying, dispatch and studio preparation teams. And now we come to our readers, and unfortunately we've got to say goodbye to John Regan because he's moving away, and we shall miss him on this team, and I'm sure a lot of other people will miss hearing your voice and your sense of humour.
Well, it's been a pleasure.
Well, let's all say our goodbyes anyway. From Frieda Bates.
Goodbye.
John Regan.
Bye-bye.
And Daphne Poupart.
Goodbye.
And from me, Vara Williams, goodbye, and do have a good week. And please post your memory sticks back as soon as possible in the yellow wallet. And when you put your label inside, please make sure that the cord attached to the memory stick is fully inside the wallet as well. Thank you.